Chapter 9. A great tactician creates plans. A good tactician recognizes the soundness of a plan presented to him. A fair tactician must see the plan succeed before offering approval. Those with no tactical ability at all may never understand or accept it. Nor will such people understand or accept the tactician. To those without that ability, those who possess it are a mystery. And when a mind is too deficient in understanding, the resulting gap is often filled with resentment.
Let me get this straight, Captain Rossi growled, peering up at Thrawn and Eli. You're saying you let yourself be captured?
Yes, ma'am, Thrawn said. It seemed the simplest way to find and rescue the Dromedar's crew.
Damn stupid risk, Rossi said flatly. Especially when you didn't even know if they were still alive.
I thought the chances were good that they were, ma'am, Thrawn said. Signy is not a malicious or casual killer. If he were, he would have simply shot the three of us once Ensign Barlin unlocked the hyperdrive. Our backs were to him, and he had a clear shot.
Which makes two stupid risks, Rossi said. And not just of your own life, but also those of my crew.
It was not a serious risk, Thrawn said. I was watching his reflection in the Tabana cylinders. If he had prepared to shoot, I would have noted the change in his stance in time to stop him.
Rossi gave a snort.
You have an answer for everything, don't you?
Part of my job is to anticipate the actions of our enemies.
Rossi threw a look at Eli, as if daring him to say something. But Eli knew better. He'd seen the captain in this mood, and knew she was itching to find something she could throw back in Thrawn's face. Only in this case, she was out of luck. Thrawn had outmaneuvered Signy, he'd outmaneuvered the pirates, and he would outmaneuver Rossi, too.
Sounds more like dumb luck than sound planning, the captain said, shifting her glare back to Thrawn and turning up the intensity a couple of notches. There's no way you could have known Signy wasn't exactly who he claimed until he pulled that blaster.
On the contrary, ma'am. I knew he was a plant from the very beginning, Thrawn said calmly. His clothing was covered with dust, indicating he had been in the area of the Tabana cylinders and the engine room. A member of the crew would have warned us about the supposed reactor leak as soon as he realized we weren't pirates. Yet he didn't.
Eli winced. He'd missed that one completely.
Big mistake on his part.
More of a calculated risk, Thrawn said. He knew there was a danger that someone would notice the lapse. But he also knew that if he drew our attention to the leak, we might wonder why he had mentioned that one specific danger. That might cause us to examine the reactor compartment more closely, which he could not afford.
Because if we had, we'd have walked in on the rest of the pirates,
Eli said, nodding.
That would still have led to our capture, as they outnumbered us significantly, Thrawn said. But Signy would then have lost the chance to restart the hyperdrive and take the Tabana, which was his primary objective.
Unless he forced Barlin and Lanio to do it at Blaster Point, Eli said, a shiver running up his back.
Signy might have some moral limits, but Eli wouldn't put a bent credit on finding any such ethical standards in Angel or the rest of the pirates.
He would not have succeeded.
Maybe, maybe not, Rossi said. Which brings us to your sense of priorities.
Ma'am?
You had a decision to make, Lieutenant, Rossi said. The Dromedar and its cargo, or the pirate frigate and the Dromedar's crew. You chose the latter.
She shook her head.
Wrong choice.
Thrawn's eyes flicked to Eli.
We saved the crew, ma'am, he said,
sounding as confused as Eli had ever seen him, and captured several pirates and their ship.
None of which stacks up against even one tank of Tabana gas, let alone 20,
Rossi said bluntly.
I'm waiting for a ruling from Coruscant, but until they send one, I have no choice but to suspend you from duty.
Eli caught his breath.
Ma'am, you're...
He broke off as Rossi shifted her glare to him.
You have something to say, Ensign?
He does not, Thrawn said, throwing a warning look at Eli. I presume I will be left behind on Ancien while you continue your patrol?
Yes,
Rossi said, looking extra annoyed at the fact that she hadn't gotten to deliver that bit of the message herself.
Whether you're confined to quarters will be up to Admiral Wiskovis. Dismissed!
Eli clenched his teeth.
This was completely unfair.
He opened his mouth to say so. Rossi got there first.
One word out of you, Ensign,
she warned,
and you'll stay here with him.
That won't be necessary, Captain, Thrawn said. I am certain Ensign Vanto will be of great value to you on the remainder of your patrol.
Are you now? Rossi said. On second thought, I can hardly deprive my special duty lieutenant of his aid. Now can I? Congratulations, Vanto. You've just been assigned shore leave. Extended shore leave.
Eli felt his stomach knot. What the hell?
Barlin will fly you down to the base,
Rossi said. Her eyes were still on Eli, as if she still expected some comment or protest. Again, Eli knew better.
I'll tell Wiskovis to expect you. Dismissed!
They left the office, Thrawn silent, Eli silently seething. What had that been all about? Because it had been deliberate. Rossi might not realize it, but then she hadn't spent as much time with Thrawn as Eli had. To Eli, the signs had been clear as day. The Chiss had deliberately maneuvered the captain into kicking Eli off the Blood Crow along with him. But why? Why would he do that? Had he manipulated Rossi just for the fun or challenge of it? Or was there something else going on behind Thrawn's glowing red eyes? Could it be that he was so afraid of losing his aid that he didn't dare let Rossi or anyone else aboard the Blood Crow see what Eli could actually do? To be honest, Eli had only a vague idea himself what that could be. He was good with numbers and supply figures. Hell, he was extremely good with them. But whether he could show any of that talent during the presumably brief time he would be out from under Thrawn's shadow was questionable at best.
My apologies, Ensign Vanto,
Thrawn said quietly into Eli's tangled thoughts.
I realize you wish to return to the Blood Crow. Under normal circumstances, I would have been pleased to allow you to show Captain Rossi and the others the depth and range of your abilities. But conditions here are not normal.
Are conditions ever normal in the Imperial Navy, sir?
Eli growled. Still, he could feel curiosity stirring through his resentment. There was an intensity in Thrawn's tone that was oddly contagious. What's particularly abnormal about this one?
Captain Rossi is correct. The Tabana gas is of great value, and therefore of great interest, Thrawn said. If we are to find the Dromedar before the cylinders are removed, we must move quickly. I heard the ISB is sending an interrogator,
Eli said, his stomach tightening in distaste. The Imperial Security Bureau was a necessary part of keeping order, but it sometimes seemed to go out of its way to be disliked, mistrusted, and feared.
I doubt the pirates will have many secrets left after he's done with them. That is indeed the ISB's reputation, Thrawn said. But the interrogator might not arrive in time, or may not extract the necessary information quickly enough. Remember, we have only 4 days before Angel will notice his ship's failure to reappear and become suspicious. or at least get mad.
Eli frowned sideways at Thrawn, as it suddenly hit him.
You're going to interrogate them?
Assuming I can persuade Admiral Wiskovius to permit me, Thrawn said. Tell me, what do we already know?
Eli waved a hand.
Pretty much nothing.
Thrawn remained silent. Eli clenched his teeth.
Fine,
he said with a sigh. Another game that Thrawn was very good at.
We know they were 6 days away from the rendezvous, including a stop to drop us and the other prisoners somewhere.
As you said, that leaves us 4 days to get wherever they were going.
But we don't even know which direction to look.
We have captured the sensor data from the pirate ship,
Thrawn reminded him. Eli shook his head.
You can't tell from the departure vector where a ship is going.
True,
Thrawn said.
But it would have been inefficient to leave in the entirely opposite direction. Especially as they know they have limited time before the Dromedar's disappearance becomes general knowledge. We may therefore make an initial assumption that their destination is within a cone of no more than 90 degrees centered around their departure vector.
Eli pursed his lips. And that cone covered their current location at Ancien. So at least getting to Signy's destination in 4 days wasn't completely out of the question. Wherever there was, on that they still didn't have a clue.
What else do we know?
Thrawn pressed.
What did Angel call their rendezvous?
Eli had to search his memory.
He called it the Trapo, he said.
I presume you've already looked for a planet by that name?
Yes,
Thrawn said.
There is no planet or major city listed in the registry, but note that he called it the Trapo, not simply Trapo. That may imply a colloquial or slang term.
A term for what?
I do not yet know,
Thrawn said.
But I believe that with the right questions, we may learn that. What else do we know?
Eli shrugged.
We have the faces of our prisoners. But even if they haven't altered or deleted their data files, and a lot of criminals do exactly that, it would take days or weeks to sort through all the planetary records and figure out who they are.
We may also have the pirates' own name for themselves,
Thrawn pointed out.
Do you remember? I asked you about it at the time.
You mean Kulos?
Eli asked, frowning.
I thought that was just some slang word.
I believe it is more than that, Thrawn said. Angel reacted too strongly to my interest in the word for it to have been innocent or harmless.
I didn't notice any reaction.
It was somewhat subtle.
I'll take your word for it,
Eli said, starting to feel some cautious excitement. A mid-rim base like Ancien might not have complete files on the Empire's citizens, but it should have a list of the major criminal organizations within its jurisdiction.
Have you looked them up?
I have, Thrawn said. There is nothing listed under that name.
Oh,
Eli said, feeling his excitement fade.
But there are several possible connections I may be able to exploit,
Thrawn continued.
We shall see once I am able to speak with him.
So what do you want me to do?
Eli asked. I assume you've maneuvered Rossi into leaving me here for a reason.
Two reasons, Thrawn said. I need you to monitor my interrogation. There may be a point where you will be uniquely useful.
All right,
Eli said, wondering what Thrawn could possibly mean by that. Uniquely useful wasn't a term anyone had ever applied to him.
And the second reason?
Thrawn was silent a moment.
For what I am planning, I may need a witness, he said quietly. You, Ensign Vanto, will be that witness. The three pirates are expressionless as they walk into their side of the interrogation room in single file. Each looks around the room as he enters, noting the gray metal walls, ceiling, and floor. Each also quickly spots the interrogation desk beyond the transparent barrier that bisects the room.
Thrawn waited until they were seated. Then he touched the intercom control set into his desk. On both sides of the barrier, indicator lights blinked on.
"Good evening,"
he said, speaking toward the microphone.
"I am Lieutenant Thrawn."
None of the three speak in response, but their facial heat increases. The muscles in their cheeks and throats and around their eyes shift between sullenness and hostility. The larger body muscles beneath their prison clothing twitch and tighten in distinct patterns.
"You are no doubt wondering why you are here," Thrawn continued. "I wish to offer you a deal."
Their facial glows briefly intensify, then fade to their previous levels.
"You don't believe me, of course," Thrawn said. "But it is true. We have a saying, grasp the useful, let the useless fly. You three are the useless."
"And you can go plop yourself straight back to Pandora,"
the tallest of the three retorted.
There is a distinctive twang to his voice, a twang that had become apparent during the passage to Ancien. It is not identical to Vanto's accent, but with strong similarities, likely indicating similar wild space roots.
"If you came here to insult us, you're wasting your time."
"I intended no insults," Thrawn said. "On the contrary, I am impressed that successors of the Pirate Queen Ka'ana still operate throughout the galaxy."
The pirate's facial heat increases dramatically. Their eyes widen, their throat muscles stiffen. They immediately try to hide their reactions, but they are only partially successful. And it is already too late.
"You surely did not believe that you were unnoticed," Thrawn continued. "Indeed, Grand Moff Tarkin has long noted that remnants of Ka'ana's marauders had escaped their captain's fate. I have been in contact with Tarkin, and he has expressed a desire to come to Ancien and deal personally with his last trace of his old enemy."
"We have no idea what you're talking about,"
the pirate spokesman said.
"A brave but useless bluff," Thrawn said. "However, as I stated, I would prefer to trade you for your leader. Grand Moff Tarkin might not agree, but I am here, and he is not. The true irony is that your leader, Angel, holds much the same philosophy as I do."
"What do you mean?"
"You surely noted which of your colleagues were selected to travel with him to Signy's rendezvous," Thrawn said. "More important, you surely noted which of you were not chosen. You and the remainder who were left to die."
One of the pirates looks at their spokesman, his expression tense. The spokesman ignores him, but his own facial glow intensifies.
"From both short-term and long-term perspectives, it was a reasonable decision," Thrawn continued. "In the short term, Angel loses several experienced crew. But your capture and interrogation gain him additional time to remove the Tabana cylinders from the Dromedar. In the long term, he pairs away those he deems no longer useful to his goals."
"And the Marauder?"
the spokesman shot back.
"Sorry, Blueface, but Angel's not stupid enough to dump a perfectly good frigate for nothing."
"As I said, long-term perspective," Thrawn replied.
Now they had the pirate ship's name.
"Signy has demonstrated the efficiency of his more subtle approach to ship capture. He has no doubt persuaded Angel that the Dromedar will serve him better than the Marauder. Certainly a freighter permits a more stealthy approach to its victims than an armed frigate."
On the desk, his datapad lit up with a message.
Frigate Marauder linked to 5 hijackings under ID code Eligence Hope.
Especially one that has come under as much scrutiny as Eligence Hope, he added.
You're talking Parth spit.
The pirate spokesman's voice is low and contemptuous.
I applaud your tenacity, Thrawn said. But surely you can see it is of no value. I already know too much for you to save yourselves. And once Tarkin arrives, we will know everything. Unless you choose to accept my offer, you are lost. The 3 pirates look urgently at one another.
Let's hear the deal,
the spokesman said.
I will give you and your fellow prisoners a civilian transport, Thrawn said. It is partially derelict, but it should safely convey you from this sector before requiring repairs. In return, you will identify the system where Signy and Angel have taken the Dromedar to remove the Tabana.
What guarantee do we have that you won't take the information and turn us over to Tarkin anyway?
I offer my word, Thrawn said. I also offer simple logic. You 3 are too young to have been any of Ka'ana's original pirates. Tarkin's lingering vengeance will not therefore be directed specifically toward you. More important, I know Tarkin. He will take extra pleasure in the fact that Angel will know you were freed as a reward for betraying him.
You can't know Tarkin very well if you think he ever shows mercy to anyone.
Precisely, Thrawn said. His reputation does not permit such actions. That is why I will release you on my own initiative. He will thus be able to take full pleasure in delivering the news to Angel without the need to make the decision himself. He paused. The pirates did not speak. That is my offer, Thrawn said. I will wait while you discuss it among yourselves.
He touched the intercom switch again, and the indicator lights went out. The pirates weren't fooled. They had probably been interrogated in such places before, and knew that the intercom remained live despite the evidence of the indicators. Thrawn had played all his cards, but the pirates had a card of their own to play. Leaning close, they began speaking softly together, in a language they would have learned growing up in wild space. A language that was used only there and in the unknown regions. A language that had never been programmed into Republic or Imperial translators or protocol droids. A language they could reasonably expect no Imperial had ever even heard of. Cybisti.
What do you think?
The spokesman asked the others.
You think we can trust him?
He's an Imperial,
the second scoffed.
Of course not.
Who cares?
The third retorted.
You heard him. Tarkin's coming.
The spokesman snorts.
You listen too much to Angel's ghost stories. Even Tarkin can't be that bad.
No? How come Angel keeps telling the stories? I tell you, Tarkin's pure evil.
Speaking of evil,
the second man said,
what do you think Angel's going to do if he finds out we sold him to Blueface?
Good point,
the spokesman said.
But maybe we can have this both ways. Let's take the offer, spin Blueface some froth, then hightail it to the Trapo and warn Angel. If we're fast enough, we should be able to get there before Tarkin or even Blueface can chase us down.
Unless they've already cracked the static lock,
the third man warned.
Then we'd get there just in time for our ship to fall apart and leave us stuck until Tarkin catches up with us.
You think they're gonna find an ub-dub squash who can do slice work like that?
The spokesman countered, his voice heavy with contempt.
Not a chance. Angel's gonna have to bring in someone from outside.
Maybe Signy already did,
Signy was supposed to get the static lock off before we ever came aboard,
the spokesman said.
Don't worry. We've got plenty of time to get there.
Then let's take the offer,
the second man said.
Give him something, and get the hell out of here.
Before Tarkin gets here?
The spokesman suggested.
Go ahead and laugh,
the third man growled.
I'm not.
Fine.
The spokesman looked up at Thrawn and lifted his hand.
Hey,
he called in Basic.
You, Imperial.
Thrawn tapped the intercom switch. Have you made a decision?
We'll take your offer,
the spokesman said.
Angel and Signy went to Cartherston on a planet named Kytum. You need coordinates?
Thank you. We can find it, Thrawn assured him. Anything else?
Just that you better hurry if you're going to catch them,
the spokesman warned.
They won't be there any longer than they have to.
I agree, Thrawn said. Thank you for your cooperation. The guards waiting outside will escort you to your new transport.
And the rest of the crew?
The spokesman asked.
Your companions are already on their way, Thrawn said. One more thing. You have been given a second chance. I suggest you use it to remake your lives for the better.
No need to preach, brother,
the spokesman said as they rose from their chairs.
Trust me, you'll never hear from us again.
They filed out. Thrawn watched them leave, and as the door closed behind them, he stood and faced the door exiting his side of the room. It slid open to reveal Vanto and Admiral Wiskovis.
Admiral?
Lieutenant,
Wiskovis nodded in return.
That was about as impressive a performance as I've ever seen.
Thank you, sir,
Thrawn said.
Do we have it?
We do,
Vanto said with satisfaction.
Uba, in Barca sector. It's a nice quiet place to park a freighter for a while. It's the right distance from where they nabbed the dromedar, and the insulting slang term for it is Ub-Dub. Squalsh is also the local slang term for the inhabitants, who are not generally considered technological geniuses.
He smiled tightly.
And there are a bunch of major merchant centers on the northern continent, which local slang refers to as trading posts, or for short, trepos.
We have it, all right, Wiskovis agreed. Not that I have the slightest idea why we have it. How did you know this group used to work with Ka'ana?
I did not know for certain, Thrawn said. It was only a guess, based on their name.
What name?
Vanto asked.
He frowns in confusion.
Angel?
Kulos, Thrawn said.
The name Angel gave their group. I heard that as Q-less, or a group without a Q.
After we arrived, while we were waiting for Captain Rossi to return, I did a search of known criminal groups. There were a number that included a Q reference, but Ka'ana's marauders seemed the most likely to have their resources, the history, and the contacts to deal with the stolen Tabanagas.
Seems like kind of a long shot.
It was,
Thrawn agreed.
But Ka'ana used to sign her thefts with a coded reference to her name. It seemed reasonable that the remnant of her gang would also enjoy leaving such clues.
Still a long shot.
Wiskovis shakes his head.
What if you'd been wrong?
There would have been no loss,
Thrawn said.
The ISB interrogator would have arrived, and the questioning would have proceeded on schedule. All would have been as if I had not made an attempt.
Except you wouldn't have left yourself wide open to a court-martial,
Wiskovis said.
His voice is grim.
I should at least release the transport myself.
I cannot allow you to do that,
Thrawn said.
Excuse me?
Viscovis draws himself up stiffly. His expression hardens, his throat muscles tightening. Vanto's expression holds sudden discomfort.
You can't let me do that.
I think what Lieutenant Thrawn meant, sir, is that he strongly urges you to remain as far outside the situation as possible,
Vanto put in quickly.
I believe his goal is to bring any blowback on himself, leaving everyone else out of it.
Very noble, Viscovis said.
His expression is still stiff and angry.
And if I choose to do otherwise, this is my base, Lieutenant. What happens here is ultimately my responsibility.
True,
Thrawn acknowledged.
But there is still much that can go wrong, and the balance of success and failure is still undetermined. I would not wish you to bear any blame for my plan and actions.
Or accept any acclaim for its success?
Vanto winces.
I don't think that's what Lieutenant Thrawn meant, sir,
he said. Well, then maybe I should hear that from the lieutenant himself, Viscovis said.
If this succeeds, I would of course freely acknowledge your support, Thrawn said. But if it fails, be advised that when I am brought before court-martial, Ensign Vanto will testify that I acted alone.
Excuse me? Viscovis said again.
His eyes widen as he looks at Vanto. His facial heat increases, and the muscles in his cheeks tighten.
Did he just say you were prepared to commit perjury, Ensign?
Yes, sir, he did,
Vanto said.
The tension in his voice increases, his expression showing extreme discomfort.
As I said, his goal is to protect you and your career from whatever comes of this.
For 3 seconds, Viscovis remains silent. There is no easing of his tension and anger.
This discussion is not over, he said at last. But right now we have work to do. When do you want me to send a force to Uba?
You should wait until the released prisoners have made the jump to lightspeed, Thrawn said. We do not want them noting the preparations and becoming suspicious. You should also contact the ISB agent and alert him to reroute his ship to Uba.
And then?
Lieutenant Thrawn only promised to let them go, Vanto said.
His tension also is not eased.
He never said we wouldn't recapture them if they went to Uba.
Fine, Viscovis said. Anything else?
I would also suggest you send a force to the other site they mentioned. The city Cartherston, on Kytum.
I thought they just said that to throw us off track.
That was certainly its primary purpose, Thrawn said. But the name came too quickly and too easily. We may find that Kytum was where the Dromedar's crew was to be released.
And Signy said his people would be watching,
Vanto said.
Yes,
Thrawn said.
It may be possible to learn who exactly his people are.
If we can catch them. Viscovis started to turn back to the doorway, then paused. You didn't really contact Grand Moff Tarkin, did you?
No,
Thrawn said.
I've never met the man.
Probably a good thing, Viscovis said. And if this is the way you talk to superiors, Lieutenant, you'd better hope you never do. Come on. We have some pirates to capture,